This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Cool host Lawrence Payne. Thanks, Tony, again on the other side. It is this event we call your Community Dialogue Forum Interchange every Monday at 8. Until next week, peace and power.
Keeps loving over and over again. One that men can.
Good news. The first of the Woodstock DVD box sets have arrived at the KPFT offices at 419 Lovett Boulevard and are available for pickup. If you live or work in or near the Montrose area, you can pick up your Woodstock DVD set between 9:30 and 5:30 from Monday, September 21st to Wednesday, September 23rd. If you haven't paid your related pledge, the receptionist on duty will take your cash, check, or credit card information at time of pickup. Again, you can pick up your DVD set between 9:30 and 5:30 on September 21st, 22nd, or 23rd at 419 Lovett Boulevard between Whitney and Taft. Thanks again to all KPFT 90.1 listeners who pledged during our 2009 Summer Sizzle Drive. This is KPFT Houston.
In keeping with KPFT's mission of bringing the voices of the community to you, here is one of your candidates in the upcoming election for local station board.
Hi, I'm Wesley Bethune, the tough, smart candidate for your local station board. I'll fight for you to bring more education-based programming to your airwaves. I'll hammer the corporate suck-ups and right-wing ideologues who would like to turn your station into a 24-hour-a-day jukebox. Nonviolent, of course. After all, we are Pacificans. But seriously, 30 seconds isn't enough time to tell you. Go to the website and listen to my entire opinion of what's going on and what we need to do by it.
That was a statement by Wesley Bethune. For complete candidate statements and more information about all of your candidates for the local station board, please visit kpft.org. The future of KPFT and the entire Pacifica network now rests upon the participation of our listener members. It depends upon your vote. Let your voice be heard with your vote. This is KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Polinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
Brian Levinka.
And Glenn Holt. And on this evening's program, Global is the GLBT student group at the University of Houston main campus. Everyone, regardless of sexual orientation or gender identity, is welcome to come to their meetings, and Chris Busby is here to give us more information about that. At 9:30 on News Wrap, from This Way Out, a lesbian who deserted the U.S. Army after being repeatedly harassed and threatened by fellow soldiers seeks asylum in Canada. The Roman Catholic Church in Maine orders its priests to collect donations to support the November 3rd ballot measure to overturn the state's marriage equality law. And British Prime Minister Gordon Brown issues a formal government apology for the persecution of Alan Turing, the gay World War II hero behind the breaking of the Nazi communication codes. At 9:40, Laura Groen is a pastor with a love for preaching the good news of God's inclusive love and a resulting passion for social justice. She's a native of Cumberland, Maryland, and a member of the Extraordinary Lutheran Ministries roster. Then in our second hour, Brandon Wolf will talk about a number of issues in the Houston GLBT community, and he's especially interested in the preservation of our community history. And then also in the second hour, Evan Thayer will be here to discuss Face for a Cause, his fall fundraiser to benefit an HIV/AIDS organization. For the past 15 years, Evan Thayer Studios has created this benefit to help those infected with HIV, and this year's beneficiary is Live Consortium. Live Consortium exists to reduce the stigma for those infected with HIV. And then finally, we have our feature segments from This Way Out. Tonight, Carolyn Gage talking about the second coming of Joan of Arc and selected plays, and her crusade to bring more gender-variant butch women to the stage and screen and the second part of the Kate Clinton interview. So a busy evening.
Yes, we do. But before we get started, I want to talk about a few little things. Actually, they're not little things. I had just come from a Pride meeting that was generally opened up to the public to talk about the future of Pride. And, of course, I have some special sort of concerns about that.
You've done a little work there.
Well, you've been a volunteer for many years.
Well, I've also been the founder of that organization.
Right. Oh.
They're talking about a number of things. They're concerned about the attendance was down this year. And they're, you know, sort of the magic answer, I think, in some of those board members is that, oh, let's just move it. So there's some consideration there about moving it to a different time of the year. But there was also a lot of talk about the fact that, you know, there's a lot of people that didn't know about the event because it wasn't very well publicized outside the community. And the community's also changed, too.
Now, are they talking about the Pride Parade itself or the festival?
Well, there was that discussion, too. Should we break them apart and have the parade at one time and the festival at another time? So that's it. But next week, we're going to have
Megan Stabler, the new president of Pride, will be here at 10 o'clock. So we're going to ask some of those questions on where she is on some of these things and where her ideas are and what Jack was just alluding to. We're going to get it straight from the president's mouth.
There we go.
So that's happening. And, you know, we're not that far away from the city elections this year. So if you are not registered to vote or if you have moved since the last time you voted, please make sure that you get all that stuff up to date. And it's very easy to do that. Go to harrisvotes.org. Or actually go to the Harris County website, and there's a way that they will tell you how to update your voter registration information, because it's real important that you are actually at the address where you're registered. And that deadline comes 30 days before the election, not 30 days before early voting, 30 days before the election. So that's not too far away.
And it's important for you to remember, if you've moved, just because you're still here in Houston, you may even be in the same precinct, very close to where you live, but because you have moved, there's a chance you might not be able to vote unless you change your address and get re-registered.
So, while that's coming up, we got a lot coming up in the show, and let's hit a little bit of music right now before we go to our first interview.
I am the freak, I am the bag, I am the weirdo one you couldn't stand. I am the geek, I am the nerd, you beat me up when I was 10. So
was Kevin Calhoun. I wonder if you can guess the name of the track. It was called Doll, and it was from the album Doll.
You think that was it, huh?
Yeah, probably.
What gave it away?
I think it's that sort of recurring psychic word. Sense
the
that we all
repetition.
Have, yeah, yeah.
Is that
yeah,
it?
Yeah. This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer Renee.
And Brian Levinka.
And we have in the studio with us Phil Stout, who is the current president of the Global group at U of H, and Chris Busby, who is PR with that. I guess that's the best way of putting it, the communications person.
What is Global?
So, yeah, what is Global?
Global serves as the political, social activist group for U of H. We cater to just about all your GLBT needs on campus. What question did you have in mind for particular?
Does Global stand for something?
You know how
we always are with letters and stuff.
Yeah.
Does it stand for something?
Oh, I know. We're out of all societies. We definitely have the most alphabet soup out of all the letters. Global used to stand for Gay, Lesbian, or Bisexual Alliance, and that covers all the letters. But
there's no T in it.
Exactly, which is why we no longer go by Gay, Lesbian, or Bisexual Alliance.
Global.
So now we are simply Global. When people ask for the acronym, I generally don't give it to them just because we don't include the T in that acronym. But, of course, now we do.
Of course, you could always say the T is silent.
Or you could say...
And
that's true.
You could say the T is silent, and then some T will come up and say, no, it isn't.
You could say Globalt.
Oh, please.
We've been trying to think of a way to rearrange the letters to keep Global, and so far we've got nothing.
I see. So you're the president.
Global.
T Global.
Y'all can contact Global at where?
Please visit our website. That has all of our information and wonderful pictures of the officers. Mine isn't very flattering, but it's still a pretty good website. It's www.uh.edu/global.
Okay, and you can ask them and make suggestions on how they might vary their name to include the T.
So please, I would look forward to getting some of those responses. If you want to email me directly, please send an email to queercoogs, COOGS, @gmail.com.
Oh, I love that. That's cool. That is
so
cool.
So what does Global do at U of H? I mean, what are some of the activities that y'all do?
Oh, we do just about everything. I think throughout the year, Global changes to whatever fits the students' needs. Because the college experience is all about the students, right? As well as the teachers. So, like right now, with all the city council positions going on, we've had so many political speakers just in the first 3 weeks of school, and this is week four. This is the first week that I actually don't have a political speaker lined up to come talk to us.
What happened?
I ran out of people.
Wait a second.
You've been on the city council and everything?
We got Noel Freeman. He came and talked to us. We got Carlos Obando. He came and talked to us. He was a lot of fun. And I even had a representative for Anise Parker come out and talk to us.
Well, there's some other Lane Lewis. Well, you can run down the whole list.
You know, I think it's absolutely amazing that we have so many out council people and mayoral candidates, you know, coming out, no pun intended, you know, to run for office.
It's the age of Aquarius.
You know, it truly is.
Coming out.
Oh, please.
I saw hair last weekend. I have to brush.
He's been traveling. Yes, I know. I saw hair originally on stage in Chicago.
I see.
Anyway, before these two gentlemen were even alive, they weren't even a twinkle in their mother's eye.
So, Chris, what is your role in Global?
My role is public relations director, which, as a whole, it's supposed to focus on reaching out to students across campus, making sure we remain in the media on campus, making sure we have a good public image. Specifically, I myself have taken that as a step further and engaged in student activism on campus. We have several different policies on campus which we have been pursuing for a while. Within the past couple of years, we have been focusing a lot on trying to get gender identity included in our non-discrimination statement, as well as trying to push for things such as a GLBT resource center on campus.
How's that coming, by the way?
It's going well. I would hope that before the end of the year, we would have gender identity included. But that process is very much
ongoing.
So.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we've had Josephine Hinsworth over here before, and she, we've talked about that.
Yeah, that was a couple of weeks ago. That's very interesting. It was an interesting interview.
Absolutely. And you should have been listening in out there. See, you could have learned some things. See, you need to listen to us every week. The question I was having, y'all are both in college now.
Correct.
What backgrounds do you have? What are you studying? And where do you come from?
Actually, I was born Texas raised. I grew up in Spring, Texas. Way up there.
Yeehaw!
Exactly.
That's our northern frontier.
Yeah, in spring we were excited when we got our Walmart. So little town right outside Houston. I went to a small high school where there just weren't very many. There weren't very many GLBT people.
What is a small high school in Spring?
My graduating class probably had 60 to 65 people.
Oh. That's small.
That is small.
For the Houston area, that really is.
Yeah.
And what are you studying?
Right now, I'm a double major into English linguistics and the Chinese language.
No kidding. Whoa, what challenge.
Yeah,
You'll be ready for the 21st century.
That's what I'm banking on.
Speaking of banking, we owe them all that money.
Yeah, it's been a fun study regardless, though. I mean, I've truly enjoyed learning a different language.
Chris, where are you from and what are you studying?
Well, I was born and raised in Katy, Texas.
Katy. Oh, wow.
Got some suburban gays here.
East San Antonio.
There you go.
And I went to Cinco Ranch High School out in Katy, and that was a graduating class of about 1,000, so the exact opposite
of
Sel.
Just a small high school.
Yeah. But both had their color.
And I wouldn't say it was GLBT positive or GLBT negative. It just kind of avoided the issue. So,
well, the Katy area has a stereotype that a lot of people believe. So you're telling us it's not that way? Or are they ambivalent?
I think the students were, for the most part, more positive than negative. But the administrators and the teachers just tried to avoid the issue if possible. I know that in Katy, they prevent you, or Katy ISD, they prevent you from being able to access gay-related websites. That is something that I would go on the internet and I would look it up, and they would specifically block sites like, I believe, HRC.
Oh, gosh. You know, reactionary, revolutionary websites.
But as far as college, I was entered UH probably, well, it was 2 years ago. And I'm graduating a year early, so it's kind of lose track of where I am.
Talk about
what is your.
A political major? Science English literature major.
I see. So that says law school all over it.
Yes.
Yes.
Politics.
So what are some of the challenges that Global sees as their organization, or maybe the students at U of H see today? In today's society where, I guess, gay issues are more known and more accepted?
That's true. The biggest challenge I can think of would definitely be last year when we were trying to pass the transgender addition to the non-discrimination clause. And when we were drafting up the bill and we were setting, or we were thinking about, we were talking to the student government, we were all thinking, what is going to be the opposition here? Are people going to shoot this down? How is this going to get past the student government? But it was really surprising that there was no opposition. There was only one person who brought up a question, and he was practically shot down by the rest of the administration. So the bill passed through the student government with no problem at all, which surprised all of us. And when I was talking to Noah Freeman when he came and talked to us last week, I asked him, what challenges have you faced? And he said, there's only been one caller out of the thousands I've made that has brought up me being gay as an issue. So we don't face that many issues on campus as much as Global did that I've talked about years and years ago. Mm-hmm. But still, it's always... The most recent challenge has been we had a student... In the housing issue, and he requested a gay-friendly roommate, and he was not given that request. His roommate was very anti-gay-friendly.
Bubba Redneck, I bet.
Something like that, probably. And it was just...
There are a lot of gay Bubba Rednecks out there. They just don't admit it.
They're in the closet.
Yeah, true. It's always the ones that are,
truck.
You know, the ones that
yes,
are...
The ones that are haters are the ones that really secretly have a crush.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
They're jealous.
But it made me think, and that's actually one of the things I really want Global to accomplish this year, is to make incoming freshmen not have that awkward, who's going to be my roommate and are they going to hate me kind of phase. So I would really like to get that added to U of H's a housing agreement. I've never lived on campus, so I don't have the background of that information.
Could you elaborate a little bit on that story? What was the final outcome? He had to live with this bigot and homophobe?
Well, the problem was the director of housing was very ambivalent on the issue. She would not help us, basically. Her solution was that the student be placed in a single room, and the student's family didn't think that was an agreeable solution, simply because the college experience, you know,
right.
When you think of your college experience, you always think of your first roommate.
Yeah.
You know, right. And his family wanted him to have that college experience. And it was very sad that, you know, at the very beginning of the semester, you're trying to get all of your things moved in. Your schedule is going crazy. Financial aid hasn't dispersed yet. And then of all things to deal with, is my roommate going to, you know, beat me up?
Right. You can't put up your man posters on the wall.
Exactly. You know, that'd be awful.
What was from the other side? What was the other person's family's feeling about it? I would think that if they're homophobic, that they would have had problems more so than our individual.
Well, I'm not too certain on the opposite end of the story, simply because the student's mom actually contacted me just because she was trying to set things up, because the student was sick and she just was not feeling very well. And so through the mother and I, we discovered that the student's family, even before the students had like started to know each other, they were text messaging back and forth. And when they were text messaging back and forth, they were building up a rapport, and they were becoming friends. But then the moment the student said that he was gay, it was a deal breaker.
Yeah.
That's all I know on the other side of the story.
Now, how do you reach these incoming freshmen or these students? How does Global get out and bring people into the flock, so to speak?
There are numerous organization fairs that are on campus. The one Global took place in was the one in the Moody Towers student dorms, where another officer of mine, we went and we set up shop and we had all of our flyers, and we actually got a whole bunch of names added to our mailing list.
That's very good.
Chris, is there anything specific that y'all are working on for outreach purposes? We just talked about what you do as freshmen with these, what are they, just affairs? I'm trying to get a handle on what kind of events that you're having.
Well, we have, as far as outreach goes, aside from these fairs, we have good relations with the student newspaper, which is the Daily Cougar. We have several writers. I know.
I went to A&M, so I'm kind of a...
I'm a cougar, too, but I didn't go there.
I'm an Aggie.
I just like younger... No, that's a whole different story.
That's another topic.
That's another topic for another night. Sorry.
But
the Daily Cougar.
We have several people who write in the Daily Cougar who are also Global members.
That's true.
And so we keep a very good positive image and keep Global in the local student news. And we also have several different events which we hold almost semi-regularly. We have our annual drag show, which is a huge hit.
This will be our third annual one coming in the spring.
And what is your drag name?
I'm not sure if that's on the air appropriate.
Okay, that was the pause.
That was inappropriate.
Really?
I wanted to know, because
off the air. Okay.
The G-rated version would be Felicia.
Okay.
Ah.
Okay. But as far as our drag
show... Save us, Chris. Go on. Keep
our drag show is... we had probably close to, 300 people go up to last
time? We had a lot of people.
Where do you all have that at, usually?
Right on campus. It's right in the main center of the university center.
You simply go down the stairs, and it's called the Cougar Den.
Oh, yeah.
It's right next to the
Killian. Oh, yeah, I know what that is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have a drag show there? That's crazy.
Yeah.
And we haven't faced any problems from the administration trying to deny us access to any of the resources that are provided on campus.
What about the other students on campus? Have you run into any difficulties that way?
I personally have never had a problem with another student on campus.
Neither have I, though I have met students who are what you would call anti-gay. But, you know, for the most part, those people who are opposed to, you know... gays, lesbians, bisexuals, and transgenders just mostly keep to themselves. I mean, it's a very live and let live campus, I would say.
It's crazy liberal. Yeah, it's cool. Mm-hmm. Love it.
I mean, you can't walk from one class to another without seeing at least 20 different cultures, 20 different backgrounds it's an incredibly diverse campus.
And I remember in, I won't say when it was, but it was a much smaller campus when I went to the law school there. And it was something else entirely. I'm wondering about what you've seen in the time y'all have been there, just a couple of years. Any changes, major changes on campus that you've seen, personally?
Well, as far as GLBT-related issues, the administration has definitely been talking with us more. They've been more open to us. They've been in dialogue with us, though they haven't always been in the past. I mean, they may not have made up all the changes we would like yet, but they are very, very, they're very open.
Then there anything that we request, they're generally very receptive. They give us a hearing. I've never had a problem requesting things back when I was an officer last year. We never ran into any problems with reservations or getting rooms or, you know, hiring any equipment.
Is it the current administration, so that could change, or are these people that are hired for long periods of time?
Throughout my entire stay at U of H, I've seen the same people behind the same desks.
Oh, okay. All right.
Well, as far as the day-to-day employees, those are constant. And you have the upper administration, which we have our new chancellor, Dr. Renu Kator, who I don't know where she really stands on the issue, but, you know, she hasn't done anything to try to damage Global or our reputation or the GLBT life on campus. But we also have a Board of Regents, which is directly controlled by our governor, Rick Perry. So.
You mean Pretty Boy Perry?
I mean Governor Good Hair.
Yeah. So they would, if there were to be any type of opposition, I would imagine it would come from that source, but we have seen none so far.
Now, you said that the student government passed the addition of gender identity to the non-discrimination. What has the administration done? Has it been expanded any further than that, or did it stop with the student government?
Once it has passed the student government, I'm not sure if it went through something else, but now it's sitting on the chancellor's desk.
Well, from the negotiations we've had so far, we've seen that the student government, the staff government, and the faculty government have all signed on in support. So that's all three major divisions of campus. There really aren't any other people on campus besides those three groups.
But it still takes the chancellor saying yes.
It has to be approved by the Board of Regents to go into final effect.
Okay.
So the administration, I believe, is right now working on seeing if they could accommodate the policy for our campus. They're doing their research into the issue and seeing how we could possibly work this gender identity inclusion into campus life.
It's always the bathrooms.
Yes.
Always the bathrooms.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, no, that's always the argument about it. Well, and I guess roommates.
Yeah, roommates too.
You know, I want a tea-friendly roommate. I mean, where is that on y'all's applications?
Well, I actually lived on campus
for
2 years.
Yes, well, tell me.
They had a very general form wherein they did not mention GLBT issues at all, but they did give an optional space of any specific requests that you would like. So as far as going back to the student with the gay roommate, that should have been something that was accommodated by the school as a specific request that was given, but it was not.
So he did, in fact, request a...
Yes, on his housing forum, he puts as a special request, please give me a gay or gay-friendly roommate. Yeah. And if that was just simply a box on the application, doesn't even have to ask if you're in the GLBT spectrum. All it can ask is, are you gay-friendly?
Well, also, you don't know, how do you ask the other person, gay-friendly or homophobic?
Do you hate it?
Check one.
Check one, yeah.
Put a skull and crossbones. So what is the future of Global?
The future looks very colorful indeed.
Okay, tell us about it. I like colorful.
Oh,
we do.
You.
Like a rainbow.
We have our meetings every Thursday night.
That's right. It's in the Mediterranean room every Thursday this year. That's room 91. It's simply you go down the store. You go down the stairs. It's the first door on the right once you go down the hallway.
The Mediterranean room.
Ooh. The Mediterranean
right.
room.
And what time does it start?
It starts at 6 p.m. every Thursday.
Every Thursday. And tell us about the meeting. What do you have speakers, which
Correct.
We were talking about.
We generally have something to do every single meeting. The last 3 weeks it's been guest speakers to talk about politics, race. races, basically how Global can volunteer to help. The meetings generally run about 2 hours until 8 p.m., so about 6 to 8 p.m., that's your gay time on campus. And then we always have an unofficial after event where we either go out to eat or we just go do something fun as a group, as a community. We try to pick some places in Montrose just so we can support our community.
There you go.
Excellent, excellent.
Now, Phil, I think we're wrapping up. We're giving the signal.
I know, and I'm watching the time.
Okay.
So just stifle yourself, okay. Brian.
I've been away.
He's not on 1 week and he goes crazy.
I'm trying to.
You're just so anxious. Yeah. Chris, anything else that we need to cover here before we have to close? Anything we've missed and not asked that you want to make sure?
I mean, we are a growing group. We have been growing for the last 2 years. We have gone from 5 to 10 members to upwards of 60 members.
That's right. I remember when I first joined, there was maybe 10 people, and now I see meetings where there's at least 40.
Let me give us the contact information, please.
Oh, please go to www.uh.edu/global, or send me an email at queercougs, C-O-O-G-S, @gmail.com.
All right. We've been speaking with Phil Stout, the president of Global on U of H campus, and Chris Busby, the PR director. This is Jennifer Renee, and this is Queer Voices.
Thank you.
I'm Pam Marshall.
And I'm Chris Wilson.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending July 11th, 2009. Petitions were filed this week with India's Supreme Court challenging a state court ruling that declared the country's law against unnatural sex, Penal Code Section 377, to be unconstitutional. Only reversal by the nation's highest court, or parliamentary legislation, would prevent the Delhi High Court decision from becoming the law of the land. Swami Baba Ramdev, a yoga guru and Hindu television personality, filed one challenge, telling the Indian Express that homosexuality is a disease that can be treated like any other congenital defect by yoga, breathing exercises, and other meditation techniques. Astrologer Suresh Kumar Kaushal also filed a petition against the decision, falsely claiming that even animals don't indulge in such activities. He also warned that AIDS would be more easily spread if gay sex becomes legal. The Delhi High Court ruled on July 2nd that the ban on consensual same-gender sex between adults, enacted in 1860 during British colonial rule, violated human rights provisions of the Indian Constitution. The Supreme Court notified the government, whose ministers have been unable to agree on a unified position, and the NAS Foundation, the non-governmental group that led the legal fight against Section 377, that an initial hearing would be held on July 20th.
As the summer pride season wound down in the Northern Hemisphere, an estimated 1 million people celebrated in Madrid on July 4th. The annual parade in the Spanish city featured more than 30 floats and colorfully costumed participants. The marchers, who included the country's Minister of Education and other politicians, union groups, and youth organizations, focused on better protecting LGBT students and ensuring equal educational opportunities.
London's annual Pride Parade on the same day hosted crowds variously estimated at from 500,000 to 1 million people. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown's wife Sarah joined the parade after the couple hosted an official reception for organizers and the LGBT press at 10 Downing Street. A rally and concert capped off the day in Trafalgar Square. Some speakers criticized the continuing ban on gay men donating blood, while others demanded full marriage equality instead of the all-but-the-name civil partnerships currently available to UK same-gender couples.
About 500,000 people thronged the center of Cologne on July 5th for the German city's annual Pride Parade, known as Christopher Street Day, to honor the liberation movement sparking Stonewall riots on that street in New York City's Greenwich Village in June 1969. According to a Deutsche Presseagentur report, more than 90 brightly colored floats snaked their way through the streets in pleasant summer temperatures, accompanied by marchers in what the report called fancy or revealing costumes.
Agence France-Presse counted an estimated 100,000 raucous participants at Vienna's 14th annual Pride Parade on July 4th. Latex and leather-clad marchers converged on the Austrian capital's main avenue, the news agency reported, many on colorful floats. The participants' banners and chants called for national marriage equality.
And around 300 people marched in the second LGBT Pride Parade in Bulgaria's capital of Sofia on June 27th, reportedly twice as many as last year. Police and private security officers hired by event organizers protected the marchers to prevent a recurrence of last year's violence. Skinheads and right-wing extremists attacked the city's first parade with bottles, rocks, eggs, smoke bombs, and Molotov cocktails. Police made 80 arrests. This year's parade encountered nothing more serious than some booing. Marchers called for passage of a workplace anti-discrimination law. In the U.S., the state of Massachusetts is suing the federal government over DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act. That 1996 law denies federal recognition to legally united same-gender couples and allows states to refuse to recognize such legal unions performed elsewhere. Massachusetts Attorney General Martha Coakley argues in the lawsuit filed in federal court in Boston this week that DOMA interferes with her state's ability to define and regulate marriage. For example, Coakley said, DOMA requires Massachusetts, which enacted marriage equality in 2004, to violate the constitutional rights of its citizens by treating married heterosexual couples and married same-gender couples differently in its distribution of federal Medicaid benefits and Social Security payments to spouses. A federal challenge to DOMA was also filed in March by the Boston-based Gay and Lesbian Advocates and Defenders, the legal advocacy group that won marriage equality in the state. Washington, D.C.'s law recognizing lesbian and gay marriages legally performed elsewhere took effect on July 7th after opponents lost a court challenge seeking a public referendum on the matter. Congress, which has oversight on all D.C. laws, had 30 days to review the bill. It took no action, allowing the measure to become law. Openly gay city council member David Catania says it's the first step toward passing a marriage equality law in the city. House committees held hearings in the nation's capital on the Domestic Partnership Benefits and Obligations Act, which would provide gay and lesbian federal employees with the same spousal benefits given to heterosexual workers. And the Safe Schools Improvement Act, which would fund school programs to prevent bullying and harassment on the basis of actual or perceived sexual orientation and gender identity. And an Iraq war veteran has become the lead sponsor of a bill to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. U.S. Representative Patrick Murphy, a Pennsylvania Democrat, is a former West Point professor who had earlier earned a Bronze Star, rising to the rank of captain in the Army's 82nd Airborne Division. He takes over as lead sponsor for Ellen Tauscher, who reintroduced the Military Readiness Enhancement Act earlier this year. She's leaving Congress to take a position with the Obama administration. The bill currently has 150 co-sponsors in the House. Family members of murdered gay sailor August Provost III arrived in San Diego from their Houston home this week to claim his body and to keep the pressure on military officials to be forthcoming about the circumstances of the 29-year-old African-American man's murder. His family said the Navy told him that he was shot three times while serving sentry duty on June 30th at Southern California's Camp Pendleton Marine Base. His feet and hands were bound, his mouth was gagged, and the body had been burned. Naval investigators have insisted that the murder was a random act unrelated to his sexuality, but his family and community activists, joined by some local and state elected officials, have charged that it was more likely a hate crime. A person of interest is reportedly in custody, but no charges have been filed to date. About 100 people gathered near Camp Pendleton on the evening of July 10th for a candlelight vigil for the slain sailor. Family member Rose Roy said her nephew had complained about being harassed for being gay. She told the Associated Press that the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy discouraged him from asking for help from military officials. That phrase is just stupid, she said, because it tells them they have no one to speak to. At the request of Fort Worth Mayor Mike Moncrief, the head of the United States Attorney's Office for the Northern District of Texas agreed this week to review the results of an investigation into allegations that law enforcement officers used excessive force during a June 28th raid on a newly opened gay bar, the Rainbow Lounge. City police and state alcohol control agents arrested seven men on public intoxication charges in the raid, and at least two were seriously injured. One of them, Chad Gibson, was released this week from a hospital after suffering a head injury that led to a blood clot in his brain. Witnesses during the raid said he was thrown headfirst into a wall and knocked to the floor by officers who later accused him of grabbing the groin of one of them. Gibson told local television stations this week that he did nothing of the sort, and witnesses said that he was roughed up for no apparent reason. The New York Times reported that another patron at the bar suffered broken ribs, and a third received a broken thumb during their arrests. The Fort Worth Police Department has temporarily suspended joint operations with the Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission, and both agencies say they're conducting internal investigations. Peaceful protests against the raid continued this week outside the Rainbow Lounge.
And finally, a gay kiss proved to be too much for security guards and a local police officer in another city in the Lone Star State. Carlos Diaz de Leon says he and four friends were at a Chico's Tacos restaurant in late June in El Paso, a popular local chain, when security guards noticed two of the men kissing and ordered them to leave. According to news reports, the guards told the men that faggot stuff wasn't allowed in the restaurant. De Leon, who described the kiss between his two friends as brief, called the police to complain. But an officer sided with the security guards, citing the Texas sodomy law, which was overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court in 2003. The city of El Paso passed an ordinance banning sexual orientation discrimination the same year. De Leon and his friends filed a complaint this week with the police department's internal affairs unit. A police spokesman told a local television station that the responding officer was a rookie who misinterpreted the law.
That's News Wrap for the week ending July 11th, 2009. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Pam Marshall.
And I'm Chris Wilson.
This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer Renee.
And Brian Levinka.
And if you've been following, we had another interview with individuals from another church. And tonight we have with us Laura Groen from Grace Evangelical Lutheran Church here in the Montrose area.
Yes.
And one of the church leaders, Bridget Jensen. And in keeping with what we're doing is we're talking about the spiritual side of our community. A lot of our detractors like to think of us or like to portray us as godless, and many other things which probably would fall into the seven words that we shouldn't say on the radio. So we want to talk about that. And so that you out there, if you don't have a church you go to, or you're seeking a spiritual side or expand your spiritual side in your life, that these are places you can go. And Laura, what part of the world are you from? Where'd you come from?
I am an East Coast girl. I grew up in Maryland. I've lived in D.C. and Philadelphia. Texas is new to me, but I am loving it.
Oh, how long have you been here?
A year and a half.
Year and a half. Oh, my gosh.
How do you like it?
I love Houston.
Good.
And particularly the Montrose. It is a wonderful place to live.
It's a little hippie liberal oasis in the vast.
Yeah, you know, here I thought Texas was all
we have
cowboys.
A little pocket of fun here.
Yeah.
You can find those.
Well, and I'm sure if you're looking for a cowboy, they're out there, too.
You drive 20 miles in any direction, and or 30 miles, I guess.
You don't have to go that far.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And Bridget, where are you from?
Well, I'm a native Houstonian, but I haven't lived here my whole life. Had to go out and sow my wild oats. And
you mean you were born here?
Yeah.
You are really a native?
Imagine that, second generation. Yeah.
Really? Wow.
Where did you sow these oats?
Not too far from home at first, going to Austin, and then had to head out to L.A.
Oh.
Yeah, that was where a lot of them got sown. New Mexico, Memphis, Louisiana, so.
But you got home.
Got back
again.
Home,
you
yeah.
got back
got
home.
Home.
Yeah, well, I want to talk to I went to one of the services a couple of weeks ago, and I was very much impressed, very open and friendly and warm and inviting, and I felt right at home the moment I walked into the church.
Oh,
so
I'm
saying that. I want to let you know that, but also the people out there that this is a place they can call home. And where is it located?
It is on Wah Drive, about two blocks north of Chance's Bar, if you want to mark that way.
A good landmark for we lesbians.
All the lesbians know. Put a flag.
That's two blocks north of Westheimer for those who don't frequent Chance's.
Yes, yeah. But everybody knows where it is.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
Everybody who needs to know knows where it is. Well, tell me something about the activities that the church has for our community.
Well, of course, we have our worship services at 10:30 on Sunday morning and 7 p.m. on Wednesday evenings. We also are a congregation that is open to everyone, not just the LGBT community, but straight folks are welcome too. And we have Bible studies and activities. We have parties all the time. The ongoing activities are mostly the worship services, and then of course new ministries that we're building up and excited about.
Well, I know that being there, and I want to make sure it's called a reconciling
in Christ.
What does that mean? I've heard that, or affirming, and right. What does reconciling mean?
That means that as early as the mid-90s, our congregation said, and I wasn't there, of course, but Grace Lutheran said that they wanted to be intentionally welcoming of folks who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender, that wasn't a hindrance towards being a full member of the congregation and participating, and that there would be a particular outreach in that area.
And so they're just totally accepting of everyone then?
Yes.
Yes.
And this is not a new thing for this congregation. This has congregation has a nice long track record.
But this started in the 90s?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, and Bridget, tell us about the other activities of the church that you might be aware of.
Well, actually, I was going to kind of go back, if you don't mind,
talk
about the
the
history of being reconciling in Christ.
Okay.
That the National Church Body is a fairly new church body. It was created in 1988, and so the movement to become reconciling in Christ kind of started there in the early 90s, and so Grace was actually one of the early congregations within the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America to become a Reconciling in Christ congregation in the mid-90s. So I just wanted to emphasize the point that we were kind of early on in the bandwagon of being those congregations that were open and affirming.
Our congregation members have been very active in the national organization within the Lutheran Church to make the Lutheran Church as a whole more welcoming. We have two members of our very small congregation who were on the board of Lutherans Concerned, which is that advocacy mm-hmm. organization, and many members who have been active for decades to change the Lutheran Church body to be more welcoming.
Well, when I was looking at the name, you know, Grace Evangelical.
Mm-hmm. That can get kind of scary when people see that word.
That and I said, well, they're reconciling the evangelical, and that was that's a layperson out here, and someone thinking about that. If they just saw the name, they might be fearful of it. Where did the evangelical come from? In this respect, to make everybody feel good.
Exactly. Lutherans use the word evangelical in a different way than it's been used out there in the public. For us, evangelical means the good news. It just comes from those ancient languages, ev meaning good, angelical meaning news. And so we talk about the good news of God's love for all people. To us, that's what evangelical means.
Oh, so
what a change. What a different way of looking at things. Because I've been in churches that are not welcoming. And they're very, non-evangelical.
Mm.
The news is bad for you.
Yeah, the irony is that when there's the word evangelical, a lot of times people want to steer away from that.
Right,
but
right.
Actually, it's kind of interesting because within Lutheran circles, people understand that ELCA, Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, actually denotes the more liberal branch of the Lutherans. Just right. Kind of like if they see RIC. If you're not part of the Lutherans, you don't know what reconciling in Christ means, but that's kind of the code that people, when they come from another city and they're Lutheran and they're looking for a congregation where they know they'll be welcome, they're looking for the RIC.
Well, we now know that you can come down here into the Montrose area over mm-hmm. on Waugh to Grace Lutheran. Are there any other Lutheran churches here in town that are welcoming and affirming?
There are congregations that are very quietly welcoming and affirming and aren't 100%.
They're in the closet.
Yes, they're not 100%.
They're on the down low.
Well, actually, there is a congregation that is
does say in their welcome statement, and that's Christ the King Lutheran Church. They haven't signed up to be a reconciling in Christ congregation, but their welcoming statement does explicitly welcome. So they, and there are others where pastors are very supportive and members are supportive, but they haven't come out publicly.
What's the difference between, what would you see in a different service between a reconciling and a non-reconciling? I mean, how do they differ? Like, what differences would you see?
In the worship service, you might not immediately know the differences. Lutherans right. have a variety of ways we worship, from very contemporary to very traditional, and that reconciling doesn't necessarily match up with that. You would just know that in the sermon that you would hear messages of love, which we hope you would hear at all Lutheran churches, right. but you would have it guaranteed that it would never be explicitly anti-LGBT, that right. hopefully you would hear words of welcome from the pulpit, right. and that in worship leadership, all people would be welcome.
Well, that was what I saw in the congregation, just from an observation. There were couples there, and there was a young couple with a child, two women together with a child, and I just thought that was, I just felt so much at home. And that, you know, okay, this is a place where I can come and find my center and be welcomed. And
absolutely.
I appreciate that. You know, and can worship. You know, that this is the one thing that, and I'm speaking for myself as a trans person, that what happened was is that my church of my home sort of rejected me. Mm-hmm. I was an outcast.
You were being judged by Christians in a church? What?
Oh, yeah. Well, hey, it didn't stop my family either. Family, friends, businesses, all those sort of things.
Yes.
But it's so warm and refreshing to come to a place where you can in fact go and not worry about someone judging who you happen to be and the way you live your life.
Mm. It's just not an issue for us at Grace Lutheran.
And that's what we all need to remember, that Christ didn't care either.
Absolutely not.
No. And I think that's everywhere in the New Testament. Mm. Bridget, what are you involved in at the church?
Well, I'm involved with helping out with getting the worship services going. I'll do the altar guild kind of things, kind of the behind the scenes, and actually just participating in the service itself. I participate in we've had a theological book study that's been very enlightening, looking at the different what we call liberation theologies, the theologies of people who have been marginalized, and how most recently we've been looking at black theology, and that's something we've been looking at. Our Sunday school classes. Actually, what's been a whole lot, what I found a lot of fun this past summer was participating in the Pride Parade. Mm-hmm. I had a great time.
Yes, hooray! That was so great.
I was the peace superhero, and Pastor was the superhero of faith, and we had a lot of fun doing that. And then we also had a variety show the next month, which was a whole lot of fun. We have a lot of people, imagine this, in our congregation who are involved in the theater. Theater arts.
No stereotypes there whatsoever.
No, Brian Showtune over here.
Yeah. I'm Captain Broadway.
So, and that was a whole lot of fun putting that together. And the purpose of that was raising funds to send a whole contingent from our congregation to the churchwide assembly. So it was great to have support from the community, from the neighborhood, from other Lutheran churches, and other from all. It was kind of interesting to see who our supporters were coming out to have fun with us. That was truly a fun night. So those are the kind of the things that we always are having projects going on. And we love to eat. We're always finding either whether it's a pot, you know, Lutherans are no, in fact that was one of our signs at the Pride Parade, Lutherans give good potluck, which is true.
Oh.
So that's some of the things that we do. And
we have ongoing groups that meet for fun together, like going out to the movies once a month. We have ongoing groups who meet to serve the congregation, baking bread for communion and for our visitors. You know, we have many of these groups, but it's those events that we all come together to throw a really great party. And, you know, that's in the Jesus tradition, too. All the Gospels say Jesus was someone who would love to sit down and have a wonderful meal with all of his friends and anybody from outside who wanted to come and join them and, you know, enjoy the meal and have good conversation and learn together. And that's a tradition that Grace Lutheran is very proud
that's
to carry on.
That's a wonderful tradition. That's to hear that. That is terrific. All right. So is there anything we haven't talked about that you want to talk about? That a question I haven't asked that you want to say?
Well, I do want to just expand upon, again, we talked about the evangelical and how it means good news. And I'm just actually right now am proud to be an evangelical Lutheran because we do have good news, finally, that the national church has voted to have equal par for everyone, whether they be in same-gendered relationships for our pastors or if not. And so that's finally good news for us.
That's good news. That's great news along with the good news.
Okay.
And so how do we get in touch with the church? Where is it and how do we get in touch with the church?
Well, you can go to our website, which is www.gracelutheran-houston.org is probably the best way. Our church office is 713-528-3269, or join us on Sunday mornings at 10:30 at 2515 Waugh Drive.
All right, and
we'd love to see you.
You said something about Wednesday, too?
Wednesday, 7 p.m., we have a prayer service.
All right. We've been speaking with Laura Groen, the pastor of Grace Evangelical Lutheran Church. Don't be frightened of the evangelical.
Good news.
And that means good news. And Bridget Jensen, a leader in the church. This is Jennifer Renee, and this is Queer Voices.
Thank you.
Automated voice on my machine says, mailbox full, please call again. Oh, the message is, hi honey, have you disappeared? You Scorpios are really weird. Maybe that's why I can't shake the phone coming. I think the only thing that's keeping me alive is a good cup of coffee and songs in the key of life. But I know, just gotta go out to play for the afternoon sun up on my face. Table walk down the boulevard, and I'm thinking I take it all too seriously. Maybe easier than it seems. Maybe I'm the one who makes it hard. That's all well and good, but it doesn't fix my car, and it doesn't keep the lights on when I'm eating in the dark.
That was Levi Kreis from the album Where I Belong that came out this year, and the track was called Gonna Be All Right. There's more of Queer Voices coming up next.
In keeping with KPFT's mission of bringing the voices of the community to you, here is one of your candidates in the upcoming election for local station board.
My name is Jerome Bailman, and I seek your support to serve on the local station board of KPFT. It is my hope that I can effectively serve the mission of KPFT through my experience as a nonprofit arts administrator and a local individual artist. I am interested to serve on the LSB to further independent expression for our city. I envision KPFT to continue to provide quality programming that reflects diverse audiences of our community. The station will better serve its listeners if we provide tools and training to the next generation of programmers. I would be very interested to develop more programmers that represent the voice of the Asian Pacific American community, a community that is underrepresented in KPFT programming.
That was a statement by Jerome Vilman. For complete candidate statements and more information about all of your candidates for the local station board, please visit kpft.org. This is KPFT Houston.
Listeners support KPFT in many different ways. Some write checks and others use credit cards. But if you're spinning your wheels looking for a tax deduction, think about donating your working but unwanted car, motorcycle, boat, or truck to KPFT. You'll qualify for a tax deduction and at the same time take care of that unfinished business. To make a donation, call our toll-free vehicle donation hotline at 877-308-2408. We'll arrange for your vehicle to be picked up and the title transferred. Then we'll send you a receipt for your tax deduction. It's that simple to support the station you've come to rely on for alternative music, news, and public affairs programming. Again, for more information or to make a donation, call our toll-free vehicle donation hotline at 877-308-2408. You're tuned in to commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston, radio for people.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey, sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
This is Jack Belinsky
and Jennifer Renee.
Well, I've been trying to get this next guest on for a little while now. Brandon Wolf is a longtime activist within the community. And actually, I think you've gotten more involved in the community in the past couple of years. Is that true? Or am I just making that up?
No, that is true, Jack.
I met you, and I'm trying to remember how many years ago it was. It was many years ago, and you were very much part of the atheist movement and the gay atheist movement.
That's right.
And is there
what a great segue after having a religious interview?
We're all one dysfunctional family here.
We don't discriminate.
And is there an organization still of that sort?
I don't believe there's a gay atheist organization. The two men, Don Sanders and Mark Francescini, both died of AIDS in '95. And after that, it just disbanded. And then actually, shortly after Don died, Madeline Murray O'Hare and...
of the American gay, American atheist.
Right, and her, who were very, very good friends of Don's. As a matter of fact, the day before Don died, I was out at the hospital, and they were there to see him. And 2 months later, they were gone. They were kidnapped.
Well, and then later on, you got involved in a thing called HandNet.
That's right.
Which was a GLBT Houston list server, which was probably ahead of its time in some respect. You want to talk a little bit about that and
the original
how that
Facebook? Is that sort of what it was?
I don't think it was quite Facebook. Yeah. But it was, well, I was thinking back on that. I remember when I got the idea for it. You remember Gary Van Ottingen?
Yes.
I had gotten an email, because email had just started to become popular. Mm-hmm. It was about 90...
It's not that long ago.
No, it was about 97, 98. And most people didn't have it. But it was about 98, and it was in the middle of the summer. and I got an email from Gary about some kind of political issue, and he had addressed it to probably 50 people. And I knew that in your email programs, you could, like, build a list. Mm-hmm. So all you had to do was just hit a button, and it went to your whole list. And I realized, it just shocked me, because I sat there and looked at all these people whose names I knew, and I thought, wow, he's communicated so quickly.
And it's really interesting, because just watching not too recently the Harvey Milk film, where back then the only way you can get the word out was the phone trees.
That was exactly what I thought of, was that at that time it was the phone trees and it was mailing parties. What really struck me, though, was it wasn't just so much the fact that I'd gotten that email from him, but somebody had a question about it. It was some kind of an event, and hit reply all, and boom, suddenly there was a question, and then boom, suddenly there were five answers that came back all within about an hour, and I thought, that's incredible. You know, all the time that it would take and miscommunication over telephones, and it all happened so quick.
Especially for a community that was, you know, a lot of us were closeted, didn't want to give out our phone numbers, didn't necessarily want to give out our names sometimes.
That's right. So it seemed like such a perfect way to get out the word about things quickly, and I thought we were taking so long to do things. Actually, I put together a list about that time. John Kellett had asked me if I would work with publicity for the film festival, because I really liked films. And they wanted someone to work with publicity. Well, I didn't want to have mailing parties or phone trees, so I said, how about if we do email? He said, well, we'll talk to the board about it. So I went to the Gay and Lesbian Yellow Pages and just dumped every email address I could get. I went out to my Epiphone phone directory, our directory, remember, dumped everything. I went into my own personal list, everything I could get. I probably had about 300 names. And I gave it to him and said, why don't we use this? He said, well, you know, the board's going to have to think about that, you know. We don't really know if we want to just be sending unsolicited things to people. And so...
What a concept.
So while it was in committee, Matthew Shepard was killed.
Mm.
And Gary Van Ottegem had asked me if I would work with the rally. And I said, sure. Well... suddenly it struck me again, I'm going to have to make a lot of phone calls. And I thought, wait a minute, I've got this list of 300 names. Certainly nobody could get on my case if I'm writing them about Matthew Shepard being killed. So I wrote and asked them, you know, if they would volunteer. And it worked so well because we were able to communicate so quickly. Mm-hmm. And with a matter of a day or two, we had a group of like 25 people together working for that rally. And then afterwards, actually, Deborah Bell had something called FemNet.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Still does.
So she, actually, she was the impetus for that. She had hers on the internet, then on a listserv, and I didn't know what that was.
Yes, exactly.
So she and I met at, of all places, House of Pies. And talked about it.
The House of Guys, as we used to.
Yeah, I thought it was appropriate. So, that's where I got the idea from. And then I took that list that I had and sent it out to people and said, would you, if you're interested in joining this list, join in. And I was surprised at, you know, how really favorable it was at first.
And then? And well, then?
Well, I think the issue with HandNet was it was great at first because it was so quick and immediate, and we all liked that. But I'm a journalism major, and I just don't have a sense of censorship. I think it's important for people to be able to communicate, even if they're saying things that you don't want them to hear. And
very much like Pacifica.
Yeah.
Oh, so true.
That was probably a good point, but that was what really discouraged a lot of people from staying on it, because what they wanted was something nice and tidy where they got announcements about the community politely every other day. And instead, you know, it developed into such terrible flame wars. There were like three times I closed it down for a week just to let people cool off. But it lives on as the Lone Star Activist Network now.
Yes, yes. It's still very important, especially for a city where we don't have a weekly newspaper.
Yes, it's a place where we can talk about issues, and I appreciate that. I just appreciate not having the responsibility of it anymore.
So you're now retired from your professional career, from your career, your salaried career, I guess, right?
Well, actually, yes, I am. Actually, Chase decided to retire.
Oh, and I know about that, too.
That was about 3 years ago, and I just decided to smell the roses for a couple years before I got back into the workforce. So,
and you've been involved in working with OutSmart.
That's right. Actually, Greg had approached me before about writing, and I don't know, it just never happened. And then he finally convinced me to write a column opposite Dale Carpenter. Except I told him I didn't really want to do what the person before had done, who kind of matched. It was like a tennis match between them. I just said, you know, I'll look at it from a liberal point of view, but I don't really want to take on Dale. And he said, fine. Because he said either he would hire me to do that, or he would get, who's the woman that writes for Detroit paper?
Deb Price.
Yes, mm-hmm. Either that, or he would get Deb Price syndicated. I said, okay. So, I started doing that, and he liked my writing, and then asked me to do feature stories, and then actually now he's disbanded the two political columns because Dale Carpenter left, and he decided to just do away with that. So I'm just working on feature stories.
Great, and how is that?
I think it's wonderful because I love history, and I've been able to meet some fascinating people. Got to interview Judge Steve Kirkland, and our lesbian judge, who none of us even hardly knew about, had a fascinating one-on-one for almost 3 hours with Anise Parker and found out all kinds of things about her background.
Some that you probably couldn't publish? If not, I'll tell you something. No.
Next question. I really enjoyed interviewing Sandy Bubbard, who runs Acadian Bakers. Lots of things in people's past that that you don't always know about that are interesting. Like, for example, that she was on Cuba when the Cuban Missile Crisis occurred. Her father was stationed there, and she remembers seeing dozens of jets lined up to take the families off to Norfolk to get them off the island.
Well, what's really interesting, you're talking about interviewing people, and this sort of just perfectly leads into this new project called Arch.
Oh, yes.
And what's really interesting about that is there's also a project on National Public Radio, and that was actually done on, I guess, CBS Radio in the 50s about people telling their stories. And National Public Radio did some of this, too. And then Arch is talking about, among other things, of actually just sitting down with people and recording their, you know, oral history, because we're going to lose a lot of this. And not just talking about necessarily the leaders of the community, but just about some ordinary people of how they lived their lives, especially in a city like Houston, that even though we still don't have any protection from the government, we've come a long way.
Absolutely.
And, you know, especially a city like Houston that had some of these, you know, really conservative oil corporations. And now most of them, except for ExxonMobil, has non-discrimination clauses, and a lot of them have domestic partnership benefits. We never thought that would happen.
Mm-hmm. It's true. Yeah, I think oral histories are real important, too, because people can leave behind programs from banquets that they've been to and publications, etc. But really a big problem is there's so much in people's minds
Yeah.
And people say, I'm going to write a book one day, but whoever does. And so it's a good way of not losing that information.
Well, and I have a copy of the original Pride Guide from the first year, and I think it was addressed to Don Sanders, if I'm not mistaken. That, I mean, it does contain all this history of people and phone numbers that, you know, but still, just listening to people talk about how they live their lives is incredibly interesting.
It is, very much so. So, and Arch is doing a lot of good things. You know, Arch has tried to make it clear that they're horizontal, not vertical, because we've got three really good archives here in town, but two of them are struggling in their own way. The Transgender Center is absolutely fantastic. I really love the archive over there. It's just mind-blowing.
And then the other two are
Charles Botts,
yes,
and GCAM. Charles Botts is located in really just such a packed little area that you can barely move. But they've done fairly well on trying to catalog things. GCAM, on the other hand, has seven storage units that are just packed wall-to-wall. And I think they've said they'd be lucky if they had 20% of theirs cataloged. So what Arch is trying to do is actually they've just submitted an application for a $350,000 grant from NEH to come in and work on cataloging so that people could actually... And that includes things like setting up shelves and getting everything into order. So,
and then sharing it on the internet as much as possible.
Exactly.
Which is just an incredible thing. And their meeting was, 2 weeks ago? They have meetings every quarter, I think it is, or every 2 months. And what does ARCH stand for?
It stands for the...
Archival...
I think it's Area Rainbow. Area Rainbow Collective History.
Okay.
Yeah. Good. It actually has Houston in front of it, but Arch sounded funny, so they said. But talking about history, actually, if I could plug one story that
sure.
I'm doing
oral history here.
For well, this isn't an oral history, but this is I happened to sort of slip into the story for Outsmart. They asked me to do a story on the Dianas, and I thought it would be you know, just a regular feature story. Well, as it stands now, it may be as big as a six-installment series over a period of 6 months, because actually I discovered along the way that our city has the oldest gay organization in the United States, which is the Diana Foundation. There were two organizations, Madison and One Incorporated, that were there a couple years before. Diana started in 1954, but they're no longer active. So that means that the Dianas are now the oldest continuously active.
The Dianas started in 1954.
Wow.
I was born in 1954.
So I really enjoyed especially going back into finding out about the 50s and the 60s. And probably the two things that amazed me the most was that back in the 50s, most of the professional gays all had boyfriends and girlfriends.
Sure. opposite sex.
Oh, yes.
Opposite sex, yeah.
The other thing was that there was a place called Hazel's Desert Room, and she always made sure that there was an equal amount of men and women in there. She had a big red light up there. Whenever the cops were coming and the red light came on, everybody switched dance partners.
Oh, my God. That's great.
And that's just sort of a little... preview of what,
well,
what the article is going to be like.
It sounds absolutely exciting. You know, Outsmart is a great, great publication. And
it is. Greg's done a wonderful job with it.
Yes, and, you know, to have a glossy magazine in this city that gives you these stories that you can't get anywhere else, and we're very lucky to have it here. And, Brandon, I really appreciate Brandon Wolf, you coming by and letting us, giving us great stories.
Thank you for having me.
We'll have to have you back.
I'd love that.
All right.
You're listening to Queer Voices.
Yeah, she lives just across the street. I look up. the time of day, which is hers, and the night it is mine. Oh, I wish I could be brave sometimes.
Tessa Perry from her 2007 album Weightless, the name of the song Brave Song. This is Queer Voices.
And this is Brian Levinka.
And Jennifer Renee.
And in the studio tonight, we have a friend of mine and a friend of the community, Evan Thayer. Evan Thayer is a photographer. He's a very famous Houston photographer. Hello, Evan.
Good evening. How are you doing?
Very good. Now, I understand that you have something cooking over at your studio.
We do. It's something we've been doing for the last 15 years, but we pick a different organization every year. This year, it's a Live Consortium. It's a new nonprofit here in Houston, and what they're set up to do is help fight the stigma of HIV and also go out into the community and help with educating people about HIV as well. It's sort of a area that hasn't really been covered that much by some of the other nonprofits here in Houston. So I felt this was a good group to be a recipient for what we're doing. And what we're doing is we have gotten together with a number of the top makeup artists and hairstylists here in Houston, and they've all donated a couple of days, and we're doing photography sessions where the makeup artist, and it's sort of like getting to be a model for a day.
Our audience loves that, I'm sure.
Superstar.
Right.
So anyway, we're going to, people will call us, and we'll set up a time for them to come in. They'll be about an hour in the makeup and the hair, and then they'll come into the studio, and we'll do several different looks. They could do a casual look and a dressy look, for instance, or, of course, obviously, it's set up for different possibilities. It can be a whole family, or it can be an individual, or it can be somebody with their pet, or somebody with their partner. You know, they can bring their mom in. We've had all sorts of different, you know, configurations.
It's called Face for a Cause, right?
That's right.
And it starts today, I understand?
That's right. Today was the first day, and it goes through October 9th. So we have about 3 weeks here that we'll be doing it.
Very good. Now, how did you get involved in HIV, and what brought you to kind of this cause?
Well, 15 years ago, I had a couple of makeup artists come to me, and they said, we'd like to do this for an AIDS charity. Mm-hmm. Would you be willing to participate? And I said, yes, of course. And so we did a couple of days, and it's grown over the years, over the 15 years we've been doing it, and we've been able to raise over that 15 years several hundred thousand dollars.
Oh, very good.
For the charities. So it's kind of grown on itself. Our customers love it. They always call us, when are you going to do this? What time of the year? You know, when are you going to do it again? So it's probably the favorite thing that our clients love doing at the studio, and I hope your listening audience would also call and participate with us.
So if there's someone out there that's interested in this, do they call your studio directly? Is there a website?
Right. They can call the studio at 713-524-0199. Okay. And we'll mention that number several times.
Yeah.
But they can also go to our website and get additional information about it as well. There's a blog that I just put on our website, and the website is www.evanthayer.com. And just remember, Evan spelled E-V-I-N.
I always mess that up.
But if they call or they go to the website, they can get additional information. It'll tell you about this Face for a Cause that we're doing, so you can check out some of the pictures, and it'll give you an idea of what type of photography I do.
Now, where's your studio located?
It's actually just a block from the radio station. We're just north of Westheimer and the lower Westheimer area at 405 Avondale.
Very close, yeah.
Yeah.
I love your studio because you have all your portraits of all your famous people in there. And you also did the Houston Fireman calendar back in the day.
Well, yeah, I did that for 12 years. We were just talking about that earlier before I came in here. And that was, it's a job. Somebody's got to do it.
Oh, Evan. Okay, everyone take off your shirt. Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Right. It was interesting, to say the least. And that was a fundraiser, actually, for the Children's Burn and Cripple Fund. And what's really cool about, besides the good eye candy, photography, and all that, believe it or not, with this, you know, small project like that, we raised over $1 million in that 12 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
That really is.
And, of course, anything with children always gets my attention. I have a soft spot there, so, you know.
You're a very generous person, I think, Evan.
Well, thanks. Yeah. You know, Brian, my feeling is, you know, I don't like to hear people complain about things and not have a solution.
Oh, I'm so exactly on the same page.
You know, and I think that everybody should get involved somehow. You know, if you want to make this city a better city, then pick something that you think is important to you and get out and volunteer and participate. And I think we all should. And, you know, I'm a firm believer in that you can, you know, one person can make a difference.
Absolutely.
So give the telephone number again.
The phone number that you would call to participate in this is 713-524-0199. And again, it's www.evanthayer.com is the website.
Now, we can't talk about the cost of this, but I understand it's a reduced cost, and then a portion goes to the beneficiary.
Yeah, actually, half of the fee that you would be paying goes to Live Consortium. Can we tell them how much that is?
No, we can't.
Okay.
But
well, you just have to call us.
It's substantial.
Yes,
and this, just call if you're curious, and just call and ask.
And the more people you have, the more money you raise.
That's right.
So,
well, you know, we do hope for Live Consortium that we can raise thousands of dollars. We would like to help them out and get them really going. They've been out to University of Houston. I think they're going out to one of the other universities as well. They just did something this summer out there, and they did testing, mm-hmm. and they also gave people material to help them know more about HIV and how to prevent it. So I think this is really important. And, you know, with HIV, I think people need to take note that this is not really a gay disease. It's a disease anybody can get. And, of course, the fastest growing area is with women and in the African-American community. So we all need to take heed on this and try to help prevent it.
I agree. And I also think that there's a lot of apathy with HIV/AIDS, especially in the younger generation, where they may not have seen the deaths in the 80s and 90s. And so there's the feeling that maybe it's a livable disease. Well, it's still a virus.
That's right.
It still requires medication. It still could mutate. I mean, it's not going anywhere anytime soon. There's no cure on the horizon. So the need for something like this is very much, I think, appreciated in the HIV/AIDS community and in Houston. So.
Well, you know, Brian, I was looking at a picture the other day of a group of friends of mine, and we had all gone up to New York for Christmas one year. And sadly, I have to say that there was 12 people in the picture, and 9 of them are no longer alive.
Such a shame. I have friends that they said that they quit counting after 150 people of their friends died.
So, again, thank God they've come up with some new drugs and that sort of thing. But still, it is preventable, and I think that having a group out there that can help with that information is important.
Well, it's such a shame that our community lost a generation.
There's a whole segment of people that are
out of our history, and it is because of apathy. There's a real chance that the black community will lose a generation, just as we did.
Well, I had a young man working for me for a while, and he was down from St. Thomas area, and he told me in the age group between 18 and 30 that over 30% of the population down there was infected with HIV.
Wow.
Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, that's just terrible.
And I think nowadays HIV and AIDS is more of a financial disease. I mean, you can live with it, but the medications are not cheap. So if you can prevent that, you know.
Well, yeah, people, you know, young people go, oh, I'll just take some drugs, you know, if I get HIV or whatever. And they probably don't know that to take those drugs could cost them anywhere from $1,500 to $2,000 a month.
Exactly. And I don't have that kind of money.
Right. Neither do I. So, you know, why get it in the first place?
Okay, so we're talking to Evan Thayer about your upcoming fundraiser that you've done for the past 15 years.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's called Face for a Cause, and it starts today.
Correct.
And goes until when?
To October 9th. And we have appointments, you know, all day long and into the early evening. It's going to go for about 3 weeks here. And it's a lot of fun. I mean, you'll have fun with this.
Tell us about the process.
First of all, we have some great makeup artists. The makeup artists are really some of the best in Houston. And a hairstylist, so they'll come in, they'll spend about an hour, you know, getting their hair and makeup done, and they can bring several clothes. If they're not sure what to bring, they can bring it, and I'll help them pick, you know.
That keen eye.
Yeah. And, I mean, you know, my style is sort of like if you saw a Gap ad, you know. So it's going to be, it's not a formal portrait, it's more commercial. My background is actually in commercial photography, and back during the late 80s I was a senior fashion photographer for Foley's.
No way.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Huh. So, you know, the look is going to have more of a model commercial look. My style is very clean, simple, contemporary. And actually back in the 90s I was kind of known as the black and white photographer here in town. So there was people didn't even think I shot color. But so I come from a little bit different place. It's not your typical portrait. It's more like something that's going to be a kind of a hybrid, more of a commercial feel.
Haute couture spread or something.
There you go.
So if I was interested, I'd call up, set at the appointment. And so I'm going to have my hair and makeup done for me.
Right.
As part of the overall fee. And then we're going to take several shots with different clothes, or about how much time are we talking about spending with the photographer?
You're going to be at the studio for a couple of hours between doing the hair and makeup and doing the photography session, and then we'll look at the results, and then you'll go through, you know, and pick from that. And so you'll be there a couple of hours for sure.
And when you pick from the photographs, you get
In the initial price that we have set up in this, you get one 5x7 retouched. And all the pictures, by the way, that I do have post-production work on them. So what we don't get to makeup and hair and lighting and posing, we're going to, you know,
airbrush.
There you go.
Photoshop.
Photoshop.
Right, right.
Ooh,
so
perfect
you're gonna look fabulous.
Yeah. That's perfect.
You know, everybody looks at these magazine covers and thinks, oh, those people are so perfect. Well, yeah, they've had the... It'll be just like we're shooting you for a magazine cover is what it'll be like.
I see. So incredible. This would be perfect to use for, like, Facebook. You can get your new portrait.
Get there your new Facebook picture.
Yeah, something like that. How did you...
And for people out there that are professional in many ways and they want to help a good cause, they can get their new headshot.
That's right.
You can get a new headshot that way, and you're helping somebody else
out. We do have several people that have called that, like, for exactly that. They wanted to have a new professional updated photo, whether they, you know, were a attorney, a realtor, you know, anything, that this definitely could help fill that niche. So certainly.
So there's lots of opportunities out there, whatever you're thinking. If you haven't had that photograph recently, this is an opportunity to have the photograph done, have it professionally done, because, I mean, you don't have to bring your makeup people. You don't have to have any hair people. That's all provided, all in one price. And you're helping
the community.
The community.
Giving back.
You're giving back and helping a great organization.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
What is that number once again? Let's get that up.
The number is 713-524-0199.
And where's the studio again?
The studio is at 405 Avondale. That's down here in Lower Westheimer, just north of Westheimer. It's one street north, actually, of Westheimer there, in the same block as this radio station. And so we're over there in the hood, so to speak.
In the hood, yes.
Right, right.
And you know, when we ask questions about this and photography, I think it was very interesting. How long have you been in the photography business?
We don't talk about that.
There's no, yes.
Actually, on the website, it tells...
You worked with Brady, didn't you?
Right. Well, I've been around in a Conestoga wagon and made him, you know, on the glass negatives there. No, I've been doing it 30 years.
30 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you started when you were, what, 10?
Two.
Two. There
yeah,
you go.
Yeah, there you go.
Congratulations.
He's
that's
being generous.
Really, oh, that, no, that's wonderful.
You know,
that's
I do have a fun job. Is no 2 days are ever the same, and I meet the most interesting people. When I have assistants come to apply to work at the studio, I tell them, well, you know, you never know who's going to walk through the door. It might be the President of the United States.
Oh, my gosh.
Or it might be everyday person.
Future mayor of Houston, Anise Parker.
Well, the funny thing is all four of the mayoral candidates in the last 2 weeks have been through the studio.
Really?
Yeah.
Right.
So I've gotten to have a one-on-one with each one of them and talk about why they should be mayor.
I see.
So of course, where are you going to
Anise,
adore?
I've photographed now probably about five times.
Have you done? Did you do the one that's on her ad in front of City Hall?
I didn't do that, but the one with the pet was the latest one we did with her. Mm-hmm. She's going to be coming out in Pet Talk magazine here soon. Yeah.
The picture they have in Outsmart, was that yours?
I don't think so. Okay. I think that was somebody else's. I haven't, to tell you the truth, I can't remember which one it was. She's going to show me which one it was.
You're so busy. Yeah.
Well, I just may have my
answer. Oh, there you go.
Here.
There you go.
There's a good GOBT Houstonian. There you go.
Oh, this one here? No, that's not my photograph. Sorry.
I was going to give you a great plug.
Oh, well.
In that case, we won't say anything.
But let's wish her well and hope she does well.
Oh, I absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
I've known her a long time, and she certainly served Houston for a long time and done some real good here.
Yes, and I hope she'll continue to do good, and I think she's obviously the most qualified, but we digress.
Yes, we're not supposed to say things like that. We're talking about
a great fundraiser.
Yes.
But, you know,
face for the cause.
We were talking about, you know, photography, and you become very voyeuristic in a way, because you're looking through this little window at life every day, and also with people that I photograph, you know, the Indians had a philosophy that once you had photographed them, you had captured their soul.
That's right. Yeah.
And I do feel like I kind of capture people's soul in a way and get to know them and establish relationships
with
them.
Well, it is like a snapshot in time. You kind of capture their essence at that one point. And you look at old photographs, you're like, God, that I was so young back then.
All the time gone?
We are talking to Evan Thayer, who is currently engaged in his fall fundraiser, Face for a Cause, now until
October 9th.
October 9th. So call the number, which is
713-524-0199.
It's a great cause, and you get something out of it.
That's right. Yes. Everybody wins.
It's a win-win.
Win-win.
Anything else that we forgot to talk about?
I think that's pretty well covered. We hope that all of you call us, and we'd love to meet new people and help us out with this. We would greatly appreciate it.
Get your shiny faces on film.
That's right. Get your new Facebook picture.
There you go.
Yes.
Thank you, Evan.
All right, my pleasure.
This is Queer Voices.
The Anti-Racism and Diversity Committee of the KPFT Local Station Board invites you to a town hall meeting Sunday, September 20th from 5 to 8 p.m. That's this coming Sunday. And it's at the Harris County AFL-CIO Union Hall near the corner of Telephone Road and Wayside in the Gulfgate area. There will be representatives of KPFT management, members of the local station board, and candidates running in the upcoming KPFT local station board election, and they will all be there and ready to meet with you. You'll be able to express your views, needs, and concerns in breakout groups and to the entire body as they apply to KPFT's mission. This meeting is one of two that are mandated in the Pacifica bylaws to be held each year. KPFT wants to hear from you and to help KPFT expand its outreach and vision for serving our diverse communities. This is Queer Voices.
Out teens will soon be playing the strings of your heart. But first, let's take a rainbow minute to tip our hats to a gender-bending jazz legend.
What Tipton did for jazz, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Dorothy Lucille Tipton was born in 1914 in Oklahoma City. She took up the piano and saxophone, but as a female, she couldn't join the school band. To perform in an almost exclusively male profession, she began dressing as a man and quickly found work playing in honky-tonks. Now, as Billy Tipton, he became a talented pianist, saxophone player, and he sang in a tenor voice. In nightclubs, women swooned over his boyish appearance. He later made jazz records with his newly formed Billy Tipton Trio. Married five times, Tipton managed to maintain his charade with all of his wives. Falling ill in the 80s, he avoided doctors to keep his gender a secret, and a bleeding ulcer cost him his life. After paramedics tried everything they could to revive him, his long-kept secret was a secret no more. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Giz Bowe.
In celebration of Pride Month, the Pacifica Radio Archives launched an LGBT time capsule project. They put out a call for people in the Los Angeles area to come in and record their personal stories and any messages they'd like to leave behind for rebroadcast 50 years in the future. Among the people who responded were two amazing youngsters who took the opportunity to go into a studio by themselves and interview each other.
I'm Benjamin, and this is my sister, Jessica Pensner. She's 16 years old.
Hi, I'm Jessica. This is my brother, Ben, and he is 13 years old. Okay, Ben, so when did you come out?
I was 10, fifth grade. It was during a school day, and my teacher, Jude, he was gay, too. He is gay, too. And I thought that I liked a couple guys in my class. I was really, really confused because of all the things that was going on. I was 10. I don't think I knew very much about that kind of stuff. So then, the first time I told anybody was my mom. I went back to my mom's house after school, and then I sort of put my face to the back of my mom on my mom's back. Then I said, "Mom, I think I'm gay." And she was like, "What did you say?" And then I said, "Mom, I think I'm gay." And then she was like, "Oh, okay." And that's all she said.
And you told me after that, right?
Mm-hmm.
How was that experience for you? Because I couldn't see inside your head at the time.
It was really different for me. I mean, I've never experienced something like that before. So we were in Mom's room, and I told you, and I said, Jessica, I think I'm gay. And then you said, I think I'm bi. And then when we hugged, we were crying, and then I felt really, really open. I felt, like, really close to you.
And that was, like, the first time that we felt so close, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Because you were only 10, and that was a bad time for me, too. We were both just going through some really weird times. I'm really glad you told me then.
Me too. So, how did you feel about it?
Oh my gosh. Well, when you told me, I wasn't just crying. I was sobbing. I didn't know how to feel, like, to tell you the truth. You know, I was, still am, bisexual. But you, my brother, being gay was such a trip for me. I wasn't sad that you were gay. I wasn't disappointed or anything. It was just so overwhelming. And then afterwards, I had some time to think about it and to figure out my feelings, and I was so happy. I was one of those girls who would always want the gay best friend who we could, you know, hang out with and go talk about girly things, and oh my gosh, that person is my brother. That, it's amazing to have you, Ben. It really is. And the fact that you're there for me and are always so nice, you're just such a nice person. And I can't believe that I have you. What did you talk to Jude about anyway?
Oh, fifth grade teacher. After I told our parents, our dad thought of go talking to Jude because he knew that he was gay because we found out about a paper that they handed out at school.
That said that Jude was gay?
No, that said that Jude was living with his husband.
Oh.
Yeah.
Which basically says that Jude is gay.
Yeah. So then Dad said, maybe we should go talk to him and see what his perception of this was. So after school, Dad and Mom went to the school after all the classes were done. We sat down at one of the tables, and then I told Jude, and then he was like, okay. And then we talked about how he was gay and how he came out, that he couldn't come out until college. And he thought of me as really brave of coming out at 10 years old. And then we talked about his high school years, how he forced himself to keep his girlfriend because his friends were not gay supporters, and how he thought of it. And he said that it felt like torture. So he came out in college, and he regretted it, that he didn't come out sooner, and that he was really happy for me.
Are you happy that you came out so soon?
Yeah. I don't have to lie as much as I thought I did.
Did you know at 10, or did you know earlier than that?
I had a pretty okay perception of it. At 10, I was still iffy about it. There was this one person that I did tell in middle school. I forgot who he was, but he said that you can't know until you're 17. So I was like, oh, okay. But later on, I got a better understanding of it, and then I said, wow, that was such a lie. But anyway, at 10, I was not sure at all. I was confused, as most people are at that age, if they think of it.
Well, now we go to Renaissance Arts Academy, right?
Yeah.
And we came there right after that whole fifth grade fiasco.
Oh, yeah.
And our school is very open with that kind of thing. and anyone who is of any sexual orientation does not feel out of place. Did you feel like you had a better understanding of who you were in that school?
Yeah, I had a lot of people to talk to. I felt so much better at Marin Arts than at VCCS, my middle school, because it was really small, so everybody knew each other.
Is it easier to talk about it with your friends at Marin Arts?
Yes. Yeah, it really is. I actually talk about it as a regular subject now because I've talked to them about it so much. There's this girl named Taylor, and she's a really good... She's a friend of mine, and she's a lesbian. And me and her talk about it in detail. It's really nice to talk to her about that. I'm so happy that I don't have to bottle it up so much. It makes me feel incredible. It's awesome. It's... If you do, I've done it before. I've stopped myself from telling people that I was gay. And I have to lie, and I'm not the best liar. I suck at lying.
Yeah, you do.
Then they ask me again, and I have to lie again.
Well, you don't have to lie anymore.
I know.
You don't have to lie to anyone, even if they are against what you are. It doesn't matter. They can't do anything to you. And if you ever need help, I'm here, and Sierra is here, and all our friends are here. Just don't worry about it, okay?
Okay.
So now you're at Marin Arts, and you're the viola prodigy. You're the gay, blonde, blue-eyed viola prodigy. How does that feel to be so wonderful?
I like it how everybody knows me, and I don't know them. It's fun. Sometimes I feel kind of famous at that school. It's really, really nice.
That's good. You're going to play something, right?
Yeah.
You want to go do that right now?
Yes? Yeah. All
right. Go for it.
I'm going to be playing the second Bach cello suite in D minor. This is Jessica Pensner.
And this is Ben Pensner.
And we thank you for listening to us.
Thank you. Thank you.
13-year-old Benjamin Pensner and his 16-year-old sister Jessica answered a call from the Pacifica Radio Archives to participate in a time capsule project. Their story and others will be maintained and cataloged in the archives and the Library of Congress to be reopened and rebroadcast in 2059. If you'd like to say something to people 50 years from now about your life as an LGBT person, wherever you are in the world, you can submit your story, song, poem, video, or audio email to gayday@kpfk.org or call 1-800-735-0230. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Pam Marshall, Chris Wilson, Rex Walker with Phil Kelly, and Judd Proctor and Brian Burns with Giz Bo contributed program material. Thanks also to the Pacifica Radio Archives. Benjamin Pensner performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is underwritten in part by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to support our work, hear our podcasts, or subscribe to CDs of our programs. To receive our weekly program email alerts, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Trapella and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on WLUW Chicago, Illinois, Planet FM Auckland, New Zealand, KRCL Salt Lake City, Utah, and more than 175 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And we're all going to stay tuned.
Have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Polensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston. And
the free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.